We're continuing the story in Sipporei Maaseiot, the final story, the 13th story of the seven Betlers, as it's known. And just a very brief summary, this story, one of the prime parts of the story is, deals with a couple that gets married, and in celebrating their wedding, the 7 days of celebration that take place, the Sheva Brachas that take place after the wedding, they meet up once again with seven Betlers. A Betler means a beggar, who they had met in the forest earlier, when these two were lost in the forest and they had no food, they had nothing, and these Betlers came, each one of them individually, and gave them food and gave them a blessing. And the blessing was that you should be like me. And each one of these Betlers appeared to have a very major defect. The first one appeared to be blind, the second one appeared to be deaf, the third one appeared to be a mute, couldn't speak at all, and so on and so forth. And despite the fact that they seemed to have a defect, they made it clear to this couple that what you perceive, what you might think is a defect, is not a defect at all. But it's simply because of the fact that this physical, materialistic world that we live in is an upside-down world, where good sometimes looks bad, and bad is made to look very attractive and very good. That's what makes it that a person who's very outstanding, very on a very high level, can be mistaken by some people as being a nobody, a nothing, chas v'shalom. And in each one of these days of the Sheva Brachas, the Betler appears. The couple yearns, they remember the great kindness that Hashem did for them when they were in the forest there and they had nothing. And they have a deep yearning that if only the Betler would show up and join in our happiness now, in our celebration. And suddenly the Betler appears and says, I'm here. And he says in each one of the cases, on each day, that when I was with you in the forest, when we parted ways, I gave you a blessing to be like me. But now that you're married, I'm giving you a gift, a wedding gift, to be like me. And then the Betler goes on to explain what he's all about, what his seeming defect was all about, and goes on to prove in each one of the cases how special the Betler really is, and how what seems to be a defect is really a major asset that this Betler has. In the previous shiur, we started discussing the third Betler, how he had appeared, and he told this couple about a group of people. He told the couple that it seems as if I'm a mute, I can't speak. But really, I have the greatest gift of speech. I have the ability to sing songs and poetry, the most incredible things that are a praise to Hashem, that show praise and respect to Hashem, to the point where there isn't anything in this world, anything in creation, not just human beings, animals, birds, trees, that wouldn't love to hear and enjoy hearing my words, hearing my songs. And he says, and I'll prove this to you, and he says that in my words and songs you have all the wisdoms in the world. And I have proof for this from the great person who is called the true man of kindness, the true Ish Chesed. And he begins to tell the story about this Ish Chesed, how they were a group of people who got together and they were discussing, each one was showing how his knowledge and wisdom is the greatest. And the first one said that my knowledge and wisdom is that I was the one who introduced metal, steel, into the world. And the second one said, I introduced something more valuable. The other one, I introduced silver. The next one, I introduced gold, and so on and so forth. And then after each one prided themselves and praised themselves with the great gift that they gave to the world, one of them said that all of you who have spoken so far are really smart, but all of your intellect adds up to an hour or a day, maybe. All of your intellect combined would add up to a day. We know that when Hashem created the world, we're told, Kulam bechachma asisa. The entire creation was with great knowledge. And all the knowledge that Hashem put into the world in every day of creation, if we look at that global, universal picture, within there, all of your knowledge together adds up to a day. I'm sorry? All of your knowledge adds up to an hour, 1 hour. Whereas he said, I am as smart as a day. So he's implying that he's at least 24 times as smart as all of them put together. This is what one of the people who was present there said. The Bettler says, I was there also, and when this person made this statement, my response to him was, as which day? As which day are you as smart as? And then this person said immediately, he's obviously smarter than I am. By the fact that he asked which day, that shows that he's smarter than me. However, my response to him is, as any day that you want. I'm as smart as any day that you would want. And now he says, to go back to my first statement, when I said that the fact that he asked as which day am I as smart as, that makes him smarter than me, I have a story to tell that will show that, that will illustrate why by his asking how, as which day, that shows that he's certainly smarter than me, which makes him smarter than, much smarter than all the others. And now he introduces this story, which is very deep. It's short. The concepts are very deep. We're going to try our best to present the story first, simple, and then try slowly to analyze it based on the commentaries that exist on these Sipurei Maaseis, on this story. He said that this person that I'm referring to, this true man of kindness, is really a great person. And what he does, this Bettler, the Bettler said, that he goes around and gathers all the true kindnesses and brings them to this man of true kindness. And he said that the concept of time, which is one of the basics of the whole physical world, the concept of time comes from true kindness. And now this Bettler says that he goes around, the Bettler talking about himself, that he goes around and gathers up the true kindness and brings it to this master of true kindness. And now he's going to lead into the story that's going to clarify this, that's going to explain this. He goes on to say that there is a mountain, and on this mountain there is a stone, a rock. From this rock comes forth a spring of water, and that's a major entity. One major entity is this mountain that has the rock, from which comes forth a spring of water. Now, he says, we know that everything has a heart. The heart means like the battery that makes the thing thrive, that makes the thing function, that makes the thing live. A human being has a heart. L'havdil, an animal has a heart. The world has a heart. The heart of the world, we're told, there's a pasuk in Navi where it says, Dabru alev Yerushalayim. Speak of the heart of Jerusalem. Yerushalayim is referred to as the heart of the world. And the Beis Hamikdash, the Holy Temple, is referred to as the heart, in a sense. The heart of Yerushalayim, the heart of Eretz Israel, the heart of the world. The Jewish people, the Zohar HaKadosh in one place, presents an incredible showdown that took place between an apikoros, a person who had no faith in Hashem, no faith in the Torah, no faith in rabbis, and this person encounters one of the leading rabbis, Reb Eliezer HaGadol, one of the rabbis of Rabbi Akiva, and he challenges him with tremendous disrespect. And he says to him, "You Jews say that you're so important and so precious. I disagree completely." And he says, "I have a few reasons why I disagree. Number one, if you're so important and precious, how come you're suffering so much? Throughout all the generations, out of all the different people in the world, the Jewish people are suffering the most, number one. And number two, if you say that the Creator, Hashem, loves you so much, how come we can eat anything we want, drink anything we want, and you Jews are so limited, can't have this, can't eat that, can't drink this, if Hashem loves you so much?" And then he goes on to ask a third question, and all of this with tremendous disrespect. And when he finishes his questions, he climaxes it by saying, "And I'm not really interested in any answers because I know your answers are nothing." The Zohar HaKadosh says at this point, the rabbi looked at him, looked at this person, and the person became a pile of bones. The person died on the spot. At that point, the students of this rabbi looked at him pleadingly, saying, "We would also love to hear your explanation, your response to these questions." And he goes on to explain, Reb Eliezer HaGadol goes on to explain how he says, we know in a human body there are different parts. All the parts are important, but they're certainly not equal. So that, for instance, the most important two parts in the human body are the heart and the brain. And the heart, because it's the king of the body in a sense, because it's the most important organ, physical organ of the body, the heart feels, is sensitive to what's going on all over the body, the toes, the head, the eyes, every single part of the body. And so too the Jewish people, because we are the heart of the world, we're the ones who feel most, and we are most sensitive to everything that's going on all over the world. And that is the pain and suffering that we're going through, is because we are the heart of the world. In addition, I'm presenting this very short and brief, and the Zohar HaKadosh elaborates a little bit more. In addition, regarding the fact that we are limited in food and drink, he goes on to say that those that are knowledgeable in the anatomy of the body and how the different systems in the body work, the circulatory system, the digestive system, and so on and so forth, when a person eats food, and the food goes into the body and it's digested, it gets distributed all over the body, from top to bottom, from head to toe. Depending on the importance of a particular organ of the body, where it is on the totem pole, where it is on the list of how important that part of the body is, that part of the body receives the purest part of the food. We know that when we eat food, part of it is integrated into the body, it's digested, and some of it is excreted or egested. It's removed from the body as waste matter. The waste matter is in different forms. Some of it is liquid waste, some of it is solid waste, some of it is sweat that comes out of the body. That's the part that's removed from the body completely. Inside the body, the food is broken down, and further broken down, and further broken down, and sorted out by levels of quality. And the higher, the highest quality of the food gets shipped to the heart, to the brain. Lower level quality gets shipped to less significant organs of the body, the hands, the feet, the liver, different parts of the body. So too, we, the Jewish people, because we are the heart of the body, because we are the heart of the world, that's why we are given to eat. The wording in the Zohar HaKadosh is, we are nizoin mishufra de shufra. We receive our nourishment from the best of the best, the choicest of the choicest of food. And it's for this reason that the Torah limits us and restricts us. We don't eat bugs and worms. We don't eat pork. We don't eat all kinds of things that we don't eat, because they are in the category of inferior compared to the importance and significance of the heart. The Jewish people are the heart of the world, and therefore have to be careful to make sure that we are receiving the choicest portion of the food. So here in the story we're told that everything has a heart. The world has a heart. And the heart of the world is a complete organism. We know in the study of Kabbalah, in the study of Hasidus, we're told many times that every single part of the whole is also a whole unto itself. For example, right now we're in the middle of the period of Sfiras Omer. We're counting the Omer, the 49 days from the second day of Pesach till Shavuos. These 49 days, when we count them, there's a special prayer that we say after the counting of the Omer, where we connect the day to the Sfiras, to the attributes of Hashem that are related to that particular day. For instance, last night was the 15th day of the Omer. We began the 15th day of the Omer, which we said corresponds to Chesed Shebetiferes. Tiferes is the third attribute of the seven lower attributes of Hashem, Chesed through Malchus. Chesed is the first one. So that the first week of the Omer, the first 7 days of the Omer, when we counted them, we mentioned afterwards that day one was Chesed of Chesed. Day two was Givura of Chesed. Day three was Tiferes of Chesed. Showing that even though Chesed is Chesed, inside Chesed is also a complete organism, which has in it from Chesed through Malchus, all inside of Chesed. So to Gevura, so to each one of these seven attributes. So that, and these attributes correspond to different parts of the body. A head, hands, and feet. We're told, for example, Chesed is represented by the right hand, Gevura the left hand. So when we talk about Chesed, Chesed is the right hand. But in Chesed, you have a right hand and a left hand and a leg and a this, all within each one. So here, we're told in the story that each organ is also looked upon as an organism, so that the heart also has a face and hands and feet. However, the toenail of the heart, we're talking about the heart of the world here, the toenail of the heart of the world is more hardy than any human heart, or any heart of any building, of any city, or any major item in the world. Again, these are spiritual, we're talking on spiritual terms. So now we have these two things. We have the mountain that has a rock from which comes forth a spring, and we have the second entity, which is the heart of the world. The mountain is with the spring is on one end of the world, the heart is on the opposite end of the world, and this heart is directly opposite that spring that's on this mountain, and this heart has a tremendous deep yearning and longing to get to that spring, to reach that spring. It's an incredible, incredible deep yearning and longing. And this heart cries out. We know there's a term, tzakas halev, the scream, the cry of the heart. This heart cries out, wanting to reach, wanting to get to this spring. This spring also has a tremendous yearning and longing for the heart. However, there are two problems here. There are two things that weaken this heart. Now, the success, before we go into those two problems, the way we're presenting this, it seems as if the conclusion will be that the heart finally gets to the spring and they're united and they live happily ever after. We're going to see that's not the case. The heart and spring don't have to literally unite. As long as they both have this deep yearning for each other, that's the connection. That's enough of a connection for them to be able to function and accomplish what they need to accomplish. If that longing and yearning is blocked, or if it's cut off, or if it's stopped in any way, then each one of them or both of them will not be able to accomplish their function. Just for a touch, for a moment, the spring can represent chachma. In Hebrew, the word for spring is ma'ayan, and we know the term ma'ayan ha-chachma, the spring of chachma. The heart is usually associated with bina. Bina means understanding. Chachma is a certain type of knowledge. Bina is understanding. These two are usually connected to each other, associated with each other. And now we mentioned that there are two things that make it difficult, that make a problem for the heart to be able to continue its longing and its connection to the spring. One problem it has is that the sun, the hot sun, the boiling hot sun, persecutes this heart and shines on it and spreads its heat, its fire on that heart. And that's one of the things that weakens it. The second weakness, the second thing that causes weakness to this heart is its deep, intense longing, that deep, powerful longing to get to that spring. Because again, the heart is always facing this spring and yearning for it and crying out for it. Rabbi Nazar in the story uses the word that the heart screams, Gewalt, Gewalt, which is the Jewish expression of oi, a deep, deep expression of yearning and longing that has no bounds to it. And when this heart needs to rest, needs to take a break, a bird comes along and spreads its wings over this heart and protects the heart from the heat of the sun, the intense heat of the sun, and then the bird is able to take a break. Then the heart is able to take a break, to rest. And while the heart is resting, while it's being shadowed, protected from that intense heat of the sun, it still looks, it's still facing that spring and yearning towards it. And now the question is, why? If this heart has such a deep longing for the spring, why doesn't it move towards the spring? Why don't they get together? The answer is that whenever this heart wants to come close, tries to approach the spring, suddenly it doesn't see it anymore. Because we said that this spring is on a mountain. It's on top of a mountain. And we know that when you're standing a distance from a mountain, you can look on an angle and you can see up to the top of the mountain. However, as you get closer to a mountain, the more you approach a mountain, you can't see anymore. The angle that you're on, you can't, something that's on top of that mountain or on a cliff that's close to the top of the mountain, you can't see it anymore. And if the heart is not able to see the mountain, it's finished. Its soul leaves and it stops to exist. Because it draws its life from its contact with that spring. So when it's opposite the mountain, it's able to see the top of the slope of the mountain where that spring is. However, when it tries to approach the mountain, suddenly, it can't see the top of the mountain anymore, and then it can pass out, chas v'shalom. And if that heart, would pass out, would stop to exist, would stop to function, the whole world would stop to function. Because the heart is the life of everything. And we know there's no existence without a heart. This is why the heart cannot approach the spring. It stands opposite it, and it yearns towards it, and it cries out towards it. Then Rabbi Nathal goes on to say that this spring has no time. It's beyond the concept of time. The only way that this spring has any affiliation, any association with time, is when the heart gives it a day. The heart gives the spring a day. I want to pause over here for now. I just wanted to show that the story is leading into some discussion about time. About time, that the heart gives the spring a day. And we're going to continue. The story is going to continue expounding on the whole issue of time and how that connects between the heart and the spring, etc. What I'd like to do now, for a few minutes, is clarify one aspect of what we just spoke about. We spoke about a heart that has a very deep longing for the spring, which is something spiritual. One description of it we said was chachma. And we said that there are two things that weaken this heart. One of them is when this longing is uncontrolled, it's boundless, then that weakens the heart. That can weaken the heart and cause it actually to pass out. Just like we know that when a person wants something, that's okay. When a person wants something desperately, that could still be okay. When a person gets very desperate, number one, they can do all kinds of crazy things, terrible things, that could lead to their destruction, the destruction of all kinds of destruction. This longing and yearning, desire, is something that's positive up to a point. When a person's desire is uncontrolled, unbridled desire, we know there's all kinds of danger that can come from that, number one. And we said that a second thing that weakens that heart is the sun beating down on it. Rav Nosson Zal, in Likutei Halacha, is in several places, especially where he discusses this story in Hilchos Malamdim, in Yoredeya, chapter 4, and also in Hilchos Trumois Umaisrois, Halacha Gimel, Rav Nosson Zal speaks about the heart of a Jew, about a Jewish heart which is spiritual, which has a spiritual longing in it. It has a Yetzer Tov in it, a gift, a soul that Hashem has placed inside the person that remembers its deep, deep connection to Hashem, where it originates from, and wants very much to be connected with Hashem and to strengthen the connection with Hashem. How does it strengthen the connection with Hashem? Through Torah and Tefillah and Mitzvahs. There are two things that can cause damage or even destroy the heart. When the heart, when a Jewish heart longs for Hashem, wants deeply to be connected to Hashem, however it's without any boundaries, without knowing when, what, how, where. If a person doesn't have any definition, any boundaries, any limitations, if the spirituality is without any constrictions, then it can harm the person. Person doesn't know how to express it, what to do with it, and there are people that do all kinds of terrible things to themselves or to the world because they have this longing, they have this spirituality inside of them, they don't know what to do with it. Some people go to the Himalaya, they go to India looking for gurus who will show them what to do with this spiritual longing. People go all over the place, and people go off to all kinds of different paths and off all kinds of different paths, looking for a way to express or what to do with this longing, this spiritual feeling inside of them. And unfortunately, many people it leads them to all kinds of, to looking to find a solution within the physical, materialistic world. There are people who think that money will satisfy that. That if they'll have a lot of money, they'll be able to satisfy that urge, that desire for happiness, joy, spirituality, whatever you want to call it. Fulfillment. There are other people that look to find that in other lusts. Lusts for women, lusts for all kinds of different things in the physical world. That's represented by the heat of the sun beating down on the person. That represents the power of the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, the fire, the passion for materialism or materialistic lusts or evil desires or evil characteristics. That's one problem. That's one threat to this heart, to the soul of the person. Another threat that's equally dangerous is that even if the person realizes that their solution is in Judaism, in Yiddishkeit, but within Yiddishkeit, they don't know boundary. They don't know what to do with it. They know it's Hashem. It's not in money. It's not in food. Fulfillment is not in food or money or lust for women. It's in spirituality. But they don't know where to put that and what to do with it. And they have this intense desire, and they're building that desire. The desire is getting stronger and stronger. They don't know what to do with it. All kinds of terrible mistakes can be made that can harm the person, that can lead the person into all kinds of terrible paths. And again, even within Judaism, a person becomes Jewish, becomes observant, but they don't know the laws. They don't know the mitzvahs of the Torah. They don't know the boundaries, the streets and the avenues and the buildings and the different floors in the building that Hashem has constructed within Judaism. They don't know that. And they have this passion, this desire, and they just express, they pick and choose for themselves what to do with it. One person decides that they've heard there's something called Kabbalah. And they know Kabbalah is spirituality. It's something very spiritual, mystical. And they say, that sounds like a good address for fulfillment, for spirituality. And they go straight to that without realizing that they're trying to get to the penthouse, to the top floor of a building, without using a staircase or without using the elevator. They're going to have an interesting time. If they do make it to the top, obviously they're going to have a difficult time staying there or getting down. Whereas, as in the story, we're told there's this bird that spreads its wings, and its wings protect this heart, shield this heart from the fire of the sun, that fiery desire. And also, it gives the heart a chance to rest, to get back to itself. It cools down that longing in spirituality, that deep longing and desire, to allow the heart to continue to exist, to maintain a certain stability, to maintain its connection to that spring without exploding, without losing it, without burning out in a sense. These wings, the Tikkuni Zohar tells us, are the lungs. Those that are familiar with biology, those who have seen diagrams of the physiology of the human body, you have the heart, which is sort of shaped like a heart, as we see in the different pictures. And the heart is beating, all the time, pulsating. We know that when anything is moving, beating, it generates heat, friction. The heart warms up the body. And if the heart were functioning alone by itself, the heart could turn up the heat of the body to the point where a person could burn up. This is why the Tikkuni Zohar says Hashem has given us the lungs. The lungs are the cooling system of the body, to cool and control the heating that the heart is giving out, pumping out to the rest of the body. The lungs bring air. We know that there's air cooling and there's water cooling. And the air and the liquid, the moisture, the liquid, that cools down the heart and maintains a certain temperature in the body that's healthy, that's beneficial to the person. This is accomplished by this balance between the lungs and the heart. The lungs, the Zohar Kodesh says, are the Torah. The Gemara tells us that the lungs are made up of five lobes. Hei oini is l'reya. The reya, the lungs, have five sections which correspond to the five books of the Torah, the written Torah, the Chamisha Chumashim. When the Jewish heart that has this natural desire for Hashem, this natural desire for Chachma of Kedusha, for connecting with everything that's good, when that heart is either being attacked by the physical, materialistic desires of this world, it's suffering. It's in a state of suffering. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, Cherpa Shavra Libi. The shame, the sins and everything of the world breaks the heart. When the heart is also doesn't know any bounds, when a person is trying to be connected to spirituality, to Hashem, without the guidance of the Torah, which gives a person paths, it shows a person what the streets are, what the avenues are, what's the first floor, second floor of spirituality, then the heart, all of this can fail. To the degree that we have the benefit of having these wings, the lungs, if you take a look at how they're shaped, like the wings of a bird, in a sense. And in fact, in the Torah, we have the term kanfei reya. It's referred to as the wings of the lungs. It's this study of Torah, the proper study of Torah, with the proper guidance, with the proper rabbis, who are qualified to teach a person what the boundaries are, what's right, what's left, what's center, what's too much to the right, what's too much to the left, so that a person can get burned or frozen or messed up. This is one of the ramazim that's being referred to in this part of the story. Mitzvah Hashem in the following shir will continue to clarify this point and move on to the other points of this story.